Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday, the 19th of May, and very nice to have you with us. We welcome you to get involved. Write to us, roundtable at wamc.org, roundtable at wamc.org. By my count, we have 19 things to discuss today. So
that's a lot.
Busy.
Way too many.
That's a lot.
We'll have a lot of lightning rounds today and try to go quick on a lot of different things. So we welcome your comments, roundtable at wamc.org. And, don't take too long writing your notes, or you'll miss at least five or six topics that we're discussing.
And not only that, keep the notes short.
Yes, because then it makes it easier to read, and we can get to more stuff. Excellent. All right. Now that we have set the rules, let me introduce the panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. What a great weekend. The garden and the grandbaby. Terrific.
Together. Two great things.
Wonderful.
In one. Yeah. Excellent. Libby Post.
Good morning, dear.
How are you?
I am fine. How are you?
A wonderful political consultant who joins us every Monday and whatever other day we ask her to.
This
and
is
we
true.
Thank you very much for,
I'm easy.
For being here.
Right.
We and and University of Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter. Rosemary Mayo is here. Good morning.
Also a great weekend. We had commencement at U Albany.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I went to the Lavender graduation.
Yeah.
On Friday, and my very, very dear, good friend, Gloria DeSaul, who was the affirmative action officer at the university for a very, very long time, and Alan, you knew her.
I knew her well.
She got the Harvey Milk Award, which I got last year. It's an alumnus award. It was really lovely. She is so
well-deserved.
So well-deserved, and she's a wonderful, wonderful woman. And then we saw the God Game at Cap Rep. I think that's the name of this.
With Yvonne Perry, who was amazing in that.
It was really interesting. It was a great, it was a very, very interesting play.
Cool. All right. Well, now that we're up to date, let's start with what we're up to today and what we've got to talk about. We'll start off with the, this is a story that broke last week, and I don't think we talked about it, so I thought we would get to it today because the president is saying that he is madder than hell about reports that some medical facilities run by the Department of Veterans Affairs have falsified data to hide substantial delays for veterans to see doctors, and he has demanded that the department leaders fix these things, quote, the White House chief of staff said in an interview aired Sunday. The president is mad, and I've got the scars to prove it. Given the briefings that I've given the president on the subject, the chief of staff, Dennis McDonough, said on Face the Nation yesterday. He said that the White House had deployed additional staff over to the Veterans Administration to dig into this to find out if this is a series of isolated cases or whether this is a systematic issue that we need to address with wholesale reform. He also called attention to what he said had been substantial increases in resources devoted to veterans care under President Obama.
So the way that I see this is that unlike Benghazi and all the other stuff which they're trying to politicize and work out, This is bad stuff.
It's real. It's real really, and provable.
This is real.
Yeah.
And you know, the VA guy said he was madder. He was mad as hell. And the president went one step further and said, "I'm madder than hell." I'm not quite sure what hell is, but in any case,
bad.
But in any case, they have to. They have to do something about this now. There are all kinds of defenses. There's the George Bush did it first defense. There's the other thing. But in the end, it's your watch, and you're responsible. And for once, John McCain was right. He said these are the people who go to defend the country at great peril, great risk of their lives. And the one thing that we owe them is better than this.
Heads should roll.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. There needs to be a major reorganization there.
The officials of the department have been horrible in the congressional hearings. They have not admitted blame. There's evidence of a cover-up where they tried to hide exactly how long people were waiting and what happened to people who were forced to wait.
That's how they always get them.
And
it's
in
never
some
on
cases,
the thing. It's always on the cover-up.
And in some cases, months.
Yeah.
Months and months of waiting for the doctor.
Yeah.
And the secret list that they were keeping, and as you said, Alan, the cover up on top of it, the department's inspector general is working with federal prosecutors to ascertain whether criminal violations have occurred. And as you say, heads should roll, and I guess, you obviously have to take action against those, but then also have to fix the problem.
Oh, yeah. One head has already rolled. you know.
Has it?
Yeah, you know, yeah. One major head role already. He was going to leave anyway.
Who?
The deputy.
Ah,
right.
And he's gone now. So, but fixing it is much more important than anything else.
I mean, I think there's some systemic stuff here that goes way back with underfunding and not being able to provide all the care that they want to provide. But, you know, this in the face of the relative success of Obamacare, it's just an embarrassment. And, you know, and I love this man, Mr. Obama. I think he's a very good president. But, yeah, I know. Thank you very much. But this is not okay, and something has to be done here because these are the people who have served us. And I know doctors who work at the VA locally here, and they're very, very dedicated.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even aside from that, aside from whatever debt we owe veterans, which is real, this is a huge, immense system. A lot of money mm-hmm. is put into it, and to demand basic care, I mean, right. you make an appointment and you get one, doesn't seem extraordinarily
right.
difficult.
No, I mean, Medicare works, Medicaid works, Obamacare is working, this should be working.
Although, couldn't we get to a larger issue of just how we treat veterans in this country?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, of
they get to go on planes first. And we put ribbons on our cars.
Yes.
It's incredibly silly, isn't it?
But the money that we give them, right. the pay that they're given, the support that they're given after and during their service, I mean, all of these things have come under question over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
you put that all together.
Right. Well, things have changed. I mean, Vietnam
yes.
was the low point.
That's right.
Because
That's
there was
right.
this political backdrop.
Right.
Now, you know, whenever I see somebody who's been there, I say thank you for your service because I think, and I mean it, because, you know, this is tough stuff. Rosemary, I would take some objection to what you just said for change.
About?
About, you know, putting something on the back of your car. There are people who put, breast cancer things on the back of their car. There are people who put, you know.
But then they also put money and effort into breast cancer research. What I'm saying is that we give them lip service.
Well, no, I think.
And then we don't really take the steps to support our troops, which is to look at why we send them over there, to look at the care they get here, to look at the health care system.
Well, you make a point.
PTSD,
But you make a point when you said, you know, because the greatest service is to people who are fighting in wars that mm-hmm. shouldn't be.
Right.
Correct.
Is that
That's
we
supporting
sent them there
troop.
To Iraq, mm-hmm. for example. Yeah, good point.
And,
yeah.
But, you know, compared to Vietnam, where, I mean, and I was just as guilty of this as a kid, because I was a kid during that
sure.
time, you know, vilifying the vets. Because that's what was... That's what we all thought was the right thing to do. And now we don't vilify the vets who come back. We don't, you know, it's not like it was when they came back from Vietnam, but we still don't provide.
We still
them
don't
with
have the balance right. The new research shows that they actually were horrible atrocities throughout the Vietnam War, far more than My Lai. It happened every week. Nick Turse's book is appalling at what we did in Vietnam, and we still, because of this idea that we have to support our troops, we don't talk about it. That's exactly what I mean under the rubric of support our troops. What that really means is agree with the administration on everything. If you criticize, you're hurting our men
and
in
that's
service.
Not true.
As the mother of sons, I want everything questioned. I want to know how their behavior. Abu Ghraib, same thing. Our military did that. They did that. We need special training to teach them not to torture. I don't know. Under the rubric of support our troops, we go along with a lot of stuff we should not. And I think this healthcare debacle is another one.
I think that there's two. I agree with you wholeheartedly that we shouldn't just take what the administration says as lockstep, and because that's what people do equate with support our troops. But on the other hand, we do need to be cognizant and recognize the sacrifice that a lot of these people made. You know, I joke around when we were talking about gays in the military, and now we're talking about transgender people in the military. I never wanted to fight for anybody's right to serve in the military because that just wasn't what I thought was the way to go. I don't think war is the answer. But the fact of the matter is these people have served, and there are so many homeless vets. There mm-hmm. are so many families financially strapped. who are either families of folks that are in the military or just coming back and haven't been able to find a job. Those are the things that we have to make sure get corrected.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll move on to some other issues before we take a news break. At the bottom of the half hour, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from Capital Region Honda Dealers, offering new and pre-owned Hondas in New York, Vermont, and Massachusetts for the spring season. CapitalRegionHondaDealers.com. Woodstock, New Paltz Arts and Crafts Fair, Memorial Day weekend, Ulster County Fairgrounds. Handcrafted, juried artisans and craftspeople from across America. Furniture, architectural crafts, local specialty foods, and more. QuailHollow.com. And Chandler's Restaurant, South Deerfield, Massachusetts at Yankee Candle Village. Offering lunch 7 days, candlelit dinners, wine cellar, full bar seating, and monthly wine tastings. Chandler's.YankeeCandle.com.
I would like to leave this city. This old town don't smell too pretty. And I can feel the warning signs running around my mind. And when I leave this island, I book.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel on this Monday, the 19th of May. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. AT&T agreed on Sunday to buy the satellite television operator DirecTV for $48.5 billion, trying to tilt the balance of power with media companies as the market for broadband, internet, and video shifts. This all comes just weeks after Comcast agreed to buy Time Warner Cable for $45 billion, a bid to become the country's dominant provider of cable TV and broadband service and high-speed internet access. And meanwhile, Sprint, which is controlled by the telecom company SoftBank, has made no secret of its desire to merge with T-Mobile, creating a serious rival to Verizon and AT&T.
The gates are open. And it's like kids playing, and the mother says, don't do that. And they say, but they're doing it, and if they do it, we can't. We have to do it, too. And there is that rationale. Apparently, the feds who look at these things and oversee them are sympathetic, or we're thinking sympathetic, that because one is getting away with it, the other should be allowed to do it also. It's unbelievable.
Well, all this also comes in the wake of the net neutrality, or no longer neutrality, right, decision and policy decision, and this just plays into it. But, you know, we were talking before, remember Judge
Ma
Green
Bell is back.
And breaking up Ma
right.
Bell? Ma Bell is back.
Yes.
You know, they're just, it's just a new name, but AT&T really is Ma Bell. So it's the same thing is happening, but I don't think in this day and age there are any judges who are going to make a decision to break up another monopoly.
Or
to keep another monopoly from forming.
It is interesting because that breakup did result in the wave of innovation and changes that have been predicted. And so now it's okay to consolidate again.
I
don't know. My bill, Time Warner bill, is up again. So immediately I read about their merger, and my bill is going up. And I think this is not good news for consumers. All of our content is in the hands of increasingly fewer number of players. That is not a good thing.
And also, there isn't, if you had the other thing to do, right? So if you were watching television, cable, dish, however you were watching it, DVD, and you wanted to then say, okay, well, I don't want to watch this. I'm going to watch it on my computer. You would go to another service. Well,
that's all of that will be one service. That's right.
It's all going to be together. And whether it's Netflix or whether it's Hulu or whether it's Amazon, that is all somehow put into this. And then you add, you're absolutely right, you add net neutrality into this, and you add all of these, the speed to which we get the internet and brokering deals
with
one another, which we'll pay for.
Right.
You know, what is that? What does that ultimately mean?
I'm struck by all the coverage of this and all the material. There's nothing in there about what the consumer gets out of it.
Well, actually,
look forward to the following.
There's been some. I mean, there's a theory that the consumer does better because there'll be more efficiency. It's, you know, one of the things they're putting out there. Of course, it's nonsense. In the end, the guy and the lady in the barrel always get it.
They always say it's good for the consumer, and then we get shafted, and our bills go up.
Right.
And our barrel gets taken away.
And it seems, you know, and instead of paying three bills, you pay one, but you still are paying more. The other thing, too, is...
Save money on stamps.
There you go.
Do you guys read your bill?
Oh, my mother makes me read it every week.
I try.
Yeah, definitely. You should.
We don't read our bill.
It's hard to, though. I mean, they don't make it easy.
And when we read it, we don't understand it.
That's right. Well, that's what I mean.
You call and ask questions. I love doing that.
Yeah.
And then we'll see if you're on the same page as I am. And what happens when you call and start to ask questions?
Well, you get switched from one to the other and they make you hang on. But then you'll eventually get someone and they actually will, on occasion, roll back a fee. Because they're trying to shut you up.
Right. They'll always make some sort of deal and they'll say, and you end up with more services than you had before. They'll go, you know what? But we have a great package, so we'll shut you up for a year.
Right. That's exactly right.
Well, I have to say, I'm very happy with the package I have.
Good for
you.
Well, not that kind of package. But yes, we have the Time Warner Signature Home, where we have DVRs in
all, a commercial
with all
now.
The TVs. Yeah. I know. But it's
they don't
it's
need any free help from us now.
But it's great. I mean, I as somebody who watches it a lot...
What do you
watches
watch?
TV a lot and do a lot of DVRing. I like it because I can watch from any room in the house, and our security and everything's all bundled together. So you know we do okay.
And the bill is going down for just making that announcement.
Yeah, well that would be nice.
They got you, Libby.
Well, they do because I don't want to have to deal with 17 different bills.
Yeah,
you know it's just that simple.
True. All right. And then we've got just a couple of moments before we go over to a break. Let us real quick. Let's see. We have some big issues to talk about that I think are going to take more time. So
we have Joe Bruno.
Yeah, let's talk about Joe Bruno.
Joe Bruno gets off, and I think I sort of had an idea he would at 85 years old and all the rest of it said so. But now the people of the state of New York, it looks like we're going to have to pay the bill.
I don't understand that.
Well, whether you understand it or not, tough noogies, we are going to have to pay the bill.
But say your point why, Libby, why you don't understand.
Why?
I think it's right.
I understand it. It's politics. Yeah. But I don't think it's right because why should we... the taxpayers have to pay his legal fees when it was a federal case. Now, why doesn't then the state pay my legal fees when I get sued by somebody?
You are on the money, Libby. This is the single issue about this. The legislature, in its wisdom, passed a law saying if we're falsely accused, you pay the bill.
Right.
You pay the legal bill. And we're talking $4 or $5 million here. Okay. Now,
his legal expenses ran into the millions.
Yeah, I think it said I read $4 million.
I also don't know. I want you to explain this, Alan. Why it's falsely accused? Yes, I understand the whole second trial was a joke, but the first trial was a conviction, and
it was overturned.
It wasn't actually the conviction; it was the law upon which the conviction was based.
But then the conviction got thrown out based upon the law getting law being voided. So no, he was not convicted. And I agree that there's justice here because if the feds come after anybody or if anybody comes after you and you have to hire a lawyer and use every penny that you have or your sell your house, do this, do that, then you're in real trouble. So Libby's point is exactly right. If you're going to do it for the legislators of the state, then
who end up paying for their salaries anyway.
Yeah, do it for everyone.
Right. We're paying for it.
Do it for everyone. You know, I've been saying all morning long that in the old Soviet Union, there was one lane of traffic which was reserved to members of the Communist Party. High members of the Communist Party. That's what this is like.
I think no one should get it paid for. That's what a court of law is for. If you put a law into motion that unless there's a conviction, you know, you don't have to pay. Somebody else does. We'd have fewer prosecutions.
I don't know, Rosemary. If they come after you, and it costs you everything you've got, That's another form of punishment.
We have 30 seconds, but let me just, actually 20, but let me just lead with this quote from Joe Bruno, who says, after what I've been through with 9 years of being investigated, 9 years of the feds turning my life upside down with one trial and another, with all of the pain and suffering, I'm entitled under the law to recover my legal cost, and I intend to do so.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll let you think about that.
And remember all the lawyers who are working on commission.
Everybody's making a little bit of money on this.
We'll be back with discussion.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. Moscow says Russian President Vladimir Putin is ordering troops deployed near Ukraine's border to return to their bases. NPR's Corey Flintoff reports so far NATO says it doesn't see any signs of that happening.
Russian forces have been deployed near Ukraine's eastern border for weeks, engaged in what the Kremlin says were planned drills. Ukraine's government says the Russian maneuvers were designed to destabilize eastern Ukraine and intimidate the government. The Kremlin now says that Putin has ordered the troops to withdraw to their home bases in southern Russia. If it's true, the move could help ease tensions in the days before Ukraine's presidential election. But Putin said earlier that Russia was pulling its forces back, and NATO reported that it saw no sign of the troops withdrawing then. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Donetsk.
Flooding in the Balkans is being called the worst in southwestern Europe in more than a century. More than 30 people have died in Bosnia and Serbia. The torrential rains and floods are threatening to cause widespread power outages in both countries. Prosecutors in Turkey say 5 employees of a mining company are under arrest on charges of negligence in that deadly mine disaster in Soma. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports it left more than 300 workers dead.
Some 24 people were detained by police as the investigation into the mine deaths gears up. 5 were placed under arrest by court order, including the mine's operating manager, engineers, and shift supervisors. Turkish media report that the mine company's CEO, the son of the owner, was among those detained for questioning. Officials appear to be abandoning the initial theory that an electrical fault started the fire and explosion. They now suggest that oxidizing coal ignited. Riot police and commando units are filling the small mining town as families of the slain miners demand answers. Turkey's Ministry of Labor is forming a commission to propose improvements to mine safety standards. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Istanbul.
There will be no merger of Pfizer and Britain's AstraZeneca. Pfizer's self-described final offer has been rejected by the British pharmaceutical giant. AstraZeneca's chairman, Leif Johansson, says Pfizer's sweetened $118 billion offer was not good enough.
We think that it undervalues the opportunities that AstraZeneca could have as an independent company.
A merger would have created the world's largest pharmaceutical group. The proposed merger of AT&T and satellite TV provider DirecTV is valued at nearly $49 billion. If federal regulators approve it, the combined company would be able to deliver content on a broader scale to TV screens, PCs, computer tablets, and mobile phones. They would serve 26 million customers. This is NPR News from Washington. A court decision is expected today on Oregon's same-sex marriage ban. A federal judge is to announce his ruling on a constitutional challenge to the state's ban. If it's overturned, officials in the state's largest county say they'll immediately begin issuing marriage licenses. The U.S. Border Patrol says it's being overwhelmed by children crossing the border in South Texas, so an emergency shelter's been set up at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio. NPR's Ted Robbins reports that shelter can house up to 1,000 children.
The Border Patrol says up to 60,000 children could cross the border illegally this year, largely from Central America. That's a huge increase from just 3 years ago. South Texas child advocate Michael Seifert says it's the result of rampant violence in Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador.
Essentially, if you're a good mom or a good dad, and you see what's going on in your neighborhood, you take the extraordinary risk of sending your child through Mexico to the United States to save their lives, essentially.
The Refugee Resettlement Office is supposed to provide foster care until children can be reunited with their families. Ted Robbins, NPR News.
The number of public college presidents in the U.S. earning more than $1 million a year in total compensation has more than doubled. That's according to the Chronicle of Higher Education, looking at fiscal year 2012 and 2013. 9 presidents crossed the $1 million threshold, up from 4 the previous year. In early trading on Wall Street, stocks are lower. The Dow's down 33, the Nasdaq down 6 points. I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Gilchrist Foundation, in support of NPR's commitment to coverage of the arts.
Support comes from EDC Warren County, working with communities in the Adirondacks, Lake George, Glens Falls, and Queensbury, providing existing businesses and new businesses with the resources for growth and expansion. EDCWC.org. Binghamton University's Watson School of Engineering and Applied Science, dedicated to preparing engineering and computer science students to meet the challenges of the future. Binghamton.edu. And Foresight Land Services, for over 45 years offering civil engineering, land surveying, planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and eastern New York. ForesightLand.com. Support comes from Historic Hyde Park, Memorial Day weekend events, Friday USO show, Saturday and Sunday World War II displays, Monday graveside memorial service, historichydepark.org. Healthy Living Market and Cafe, Saratoga Springs, featuring divine wines at the Wilton Mall with wines from all over the world and weekly tastings, healthylivingmarket.com. And Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, Saratoga Springs, New York, helping to bring nature closer with Eagle Optics, Vortex, and Nikon binoculars and spotting scopes, 518-226-0071.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. A lot of issues to still talk about on the panel conversation. Thank you. Took a momentary break there. But we have letters to get to, and then we will go on and talk about more stuff. Alan, let us begin with the mailbag.
Okay, mailbag. Hi, I hope to hear your collective thoughts on the Jill Abramson firing at the New York Times. We spent the entire hour last time on that. It's a mixed bag.
But we could do it again.
We may touch on it again at the end of the show.
I have one or two thoughts on that.
Okay. and then Wesley said, if reporting from the same stream media is correct, reports were falsified to keep the truth from the national headquarters from General Shinseki. This hardly seems ground for forcing him to retire, which is interesting because Boehner, the Speaker of the House, seems to be in Shinseki's corner on that issue.
I'm sorry, you're the boss. You take the blame.
Well, I don't know. Should I take the blame for anything that goes wrong around here?
You do, Alan. Oh, yeah, you actually do.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Okay, corporate billions, says Steve. The fact is that so many large corporations have so many billions to spend to buy out their competition only goes to show that they are so wealthy that they are cheating consumers at the local level and our government at many levels. And that's Steve from Narrowsburg. I love to hear from Narrowsburg. Okay, and okay, I don't doubt that. No, we don't want that one. Let's see here. Andrew writes, did anyone notice the largely overshadowed announcement by Comcast, which is going to be my provider here in the Berkshire soon, on the day of the net neutrality decision? They're going to be moving to tiered internet in the home, much like the cell phone companies. With all the streaming of audio and video in the home, this is going to end up costing the consumer a fortune. Right. Nice to see they waited till the end of the day after the FCC to announce that one.
And good
then,
letter.
John, Ma Bell is back with no regulation, no consumer protection, nice exposure, big business is in charge, John. Michael says, these are the bravest men and women obeying orders. This is those folks.
The VA.
In the army. They are thrown into hideous situations by old men for personal reasons. G.W. Bush, quote, he tried to kill my daddy. We ain't going to fight anymore. Okay, and then Jim said, on 2-27-14, Republicans derailed a bill from the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs that would have eliminated the horrendous backlog and increased medical care. Jim, a disabled vet that took 8 years to have VA claim adjudicated. Wow. And Tom, excuse me, but how much did the Republicans cut in the VA budget? Same question for Benghazi. And then Mattman. We ignore education until kids can't write, count, read, and we ignore veterans once they volunteer, get shot, and come back broken. Welcome to America. And I think that's it. Joe, did you see any others?
No, you got it.
Okay.
Excellent. We welcome your letters as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's talk about what's going on in New York City and specifically the police department killing surge in North Bronx, testing new police tactics. For the New York Police Department, a surge in violence in the 47th Precinct, which extends from East Gun Hill Road to the border with Mount Vernon, New York, presents an early field test for Commissioner William Bratton's handoff approach to local commanders.
Not only Bratton, but the mayor, too, by the way.
Right.
For residents, it's a grim departure from the trend in most of the city where the homicide rate continues its decline and an alarming omen of what the summer may bring. And the question, told to experiment, the precinct commander here is doing so aggressively and in the process providing a blueprint for how Mr. Bratton's airy rhetoric of collaborative policing might be translated to the street. We want people who think on their feet, Stephen Davis, the department's top spokesman, said. This style of thing is going to be something that Bratton is in favor of.
Well, let's put it this way. I've long studied the New York City Police Department, interested in it. No, I have. I worked for them as a consultant years ago. And it is interesting, but you know what? Bratton doesn't take the heat on this. The mayor will. If, in fact, there is a surge in killings and people don't feel safe, the mayor is going to be held responsible because he chose Bratton. And as you know, there was the stop and frisk issue that the mayor was very strong on. Now, if you're saying that the way we're going to counter the absence of stop and frisk is to say to individual patrolmen and others, you know, we're depending on you to use your brains and figure out what to do here, what will happen is you will get an errant patrolman or a policeman who does something really stupid, as we have seen in the past. So if there isn't consistent policy for everybody, you're in trouble. And I got news for you. Then this is the last thing I'm going to say because I see you raring at the bit there, Rosemary.
No, I just had some questions, actually, because you do know about this. But if the policy now is to leave it up to the local commander, and the only place where there seems to be a problem is the Bronx, this one area, why don't you just get rid of the commander
because
and get somebody in there? Why are we blaming the policy?
Answer, because they just brought him in. He was the Harlem guy where he did very well. And they just brought him in a short time ago.
But doesn't that seem to be more of what the problem is than stop and frisk or any other citywide policy if we've only seen a problem in the one area?
Well, first of all, I believe that this is a precursor of what's going to happen in New York. And I can tell you I've talked to many, many people who really were for de Blasio. And the one thing that they say would be intolerable is for crime to break out in the city because it really is number one on everybody's list. You know, drive-by shootings, a kid, abducted, any of that stuff, or killings in public places. This is something that people will not tolerate. Now, what will they trade for it?
Yeah,
will they trade stop and frisk?
That's the issue. It's always been the civil rights issue versus safety.
Yeah, we've talked
down
about
there.
That once or
yeah,
twice.
Yeah, down.
It'll be
in
interesting.
New York.
The old mayor Bloomberg is going to be in the area next week for the Williams College graduation, and I'll be very interested to see if he addresses this at all.
I was also I thought it was interesting in the Times story that the mayor of the mayor's office did not comment, or they did not seem to look for a comment.
It's quicksand, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
If they walk into it, look, it was a signature issue for the mayor of getting rid of stop and frisk. It was his way of saying to people of color and others that we're not going to allow this. Yet, if you take a look at statistics, you're going to see that minority on minority crime is by far the worst part of all of this.
That's right.
And so would a mother of a child growing up in, and we have lots of examples of this in projects, the President of the United States, the governor of Massachusetts.
Yeah, the district attorney here in Albany.
Right. Then what would that mother rather do? See a live kid or see bullets blazing because you don't want to search people who may be bad guys?
Right. And this also just ties into the GOP meme that, you know, Democrats are soft on crime. Because you do this, crime goes up. See what happens when you elect a Democrat? Yeah. A progressive Democrat? You see what happens?
And that, by the way, is why Republicans get elected every once in a while.
That's
when
right.
people have had enough.
That's
and
right.
And they say, you know, we're expecting you to do what's right here.
We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Just heard the story at the bottom of the hour on NPR, and certainly a story that is making headlines, having to do with a new study at 25 public universities with the highest paid presidents, both student debt and the use of part-time adjunct faculty grew far faster than at the average state university from 2005 to 2012, according to a new study by the Institute for Policy Studies, a left-leaning Washington research group.
So let's get this straight. The higher the salary of the president of the public universities that were studied, the more likely they were to use adjunct faculty. Now, this is a phenomenon.
Well, and also, and the student debt.
And student debt
is growing faster at those institutions.
So they're getting paid on the back of faculty and students.
Well, yes. Yeah. It's true, but the adjunct stuff has been going on for a long time. Anybody who's listened to this radio station knows that when I went to Hunter College, it was free. It was free. We didn't pay a dime. Then the door opened, and now people pay, $20,000, something like that, to go to a state university?
Yes.
I want to get that straight.
Yeah, it's somewhere in that. It was $750 when I went.
So it's expensive. The question, of course, is that when you pay somebody a great deal of money to be the president of a college, you're also often paying so that they can go out and get money.
They become really horrible jobs. They're not about education at all. They're about development. And yes, you are paid for it. Look at even in private schools too. The RPI president is one of the highest paid in the country.
Yeah.
She brings in a ton of money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what it's all about now.
Right.
All about money.
I just want to read a comment from the co-author of the study, Marjorie Wood, who said, "The high executive pay obviously isn't the direct cause of higher student debt or cuts in labor spending. But if you think about it in terms of the allocation of resources, it does seem to be the tip of a very large iceberg, with universities that have top-heavy executive spending also having more adjuncts, more tuition increases, and more administrative spending."
And one of the reasons that you pay the president of these colleges a lot of money is that they can do exactly that. In other words, you're giving them money because they're going to be tough guys, because they're going to come in, they're going to say, we have to have adjuncts. Think of all those people who are so proud of their children when they get their PhDs and all the rest. And then they end up getting, I mean, you know,
it is not exceptional
to see a professor at the University of Albany making around $100,000. Could be. I mean, if you work hard, you're a full professor, you could. And yet, think about this. What do they pay per adjunct course?
It's untenable.
It's about $2,000,
$3,000. It's $3,000. Sometimes you can negotiate four, but I am amazed that we get as many applicants for the adjunct jobs.
Well, sure,
temporary
something.
Jobs. It's not like people are saying, you know, that's ridiculous.
Well, it's a foot
they're
in the
flocking.
Door.
Yeah, they're trying to get them. It's
Well, yes, that becomes a competition, and they don't get a lot of the things that other people get. There are unions being formed by adjunct faculty, which is a good sign, you know, I think. And the kids often don't know that their people are, they can't distinguish between the status. So I've talked to people who say, for example, David Gustina, our wonderful, morning guy, he's an adjunct faculty member. And they always say, I had Professor Gustina, he's great. But they don't know the difference between a full-time faculty member.
Sometimes they don't know the difference between the full-time adjunct and the grad student.
And that's the way it should be. I mean, you should be hiring good people no matter what the status.
They hire Joe.
But it's still the responsibility of the institution to pay fairly. And I mean, I'm not even going to get into benefits. You know, to get a benefit as an adjunct is, you can't build a career now the way you used to, teaching people at a high level. These are rarer and rarer jobs.
Well,
I feel very fortunate to have one.
The cost of higher education is getting to be a real issue. Not getting to be. It's been there.
It has been.
Ding, ding, ding. Next subject.
We did good on that one.
Let's see. I want to go to... let's talk about... there are three openly gay GOP candidates who, 10 years after the nation's first
softball to Libby,
gay marriages were performed in Massachusetts, are vying for offices on Capitol Hill this year. The three are Dan Innes, who is running in New Hampshire, who faces Congressman Frank Gitna, I believe, in the primary to challenge Democratic Representative Carol Shea Porter. Richard Tesei, who hopes to be victorious in what will probably be a rematch with Representative John Tierney, a Democrat of Massachusetts.
That's a tough one, boy. That's going to be close.
And Carl DeMeo, a former San Diego City Council member who hopes to unseat Democratic Representative Scott Peters. So we were joking about the joke, which is the three gay GOP candidates walk into a bar to campaign. So,
right.
I want to ask
and get their heads handed to them.
So what do you make of that? Yeah.
I want to ask you a specific question here, and that is,
okay,
do you think that when somebody goes in, now I think most of us are on the page where we think deprivation of rights to anybody who's gay is despicable.
Yes.
I mean, I think people know enough to say that.
Right.
Okay. The question I have for you is that when they walk into the voting booth and they close the curtain, do you think discrimination still exists?
Yes. Oh, of course it does. And these guys, I have to be not as graphic as I would like to be, but, you know, one of them said, well, the guy from New Hampshire, well, gay marriage, that's all settled here in New Hampshire. Well, you go running for Congress. You know what? In half the country, you can still be fired for being gay or lesbian, bisexual, or transgender because there's no national protection. So the issue isn't done. The issue isn't solved. And it's these guys who, I mean, they're fooling themselves to think that the GOP is really changing.
Well, but don't you think they're doing it because they're opportunistic? In other words,
it's
the way you get a job,
sure,
it's the way you get into the door, and the
sure
rest of it. You know, I often wonder about this business about the kind of prejudice that exists on every level in this country towards, you know, almost everyone,
mm-hmm,
in everything. And you say, okay, I have nothing but respect for example, a congressional candidate who might say, and I ask a male who says, I ask my husband about this, because it means you're not avoiding it. It means,
mm-hmm,
you're educating while you're going.
Right.
So I like that.
You know, it's the notion that these guys think that the issues are settled because the marriage issue is getting settled.
No, but they're only saying that,
you know,
because they want to pacify their voters.
Right, right, right.
It's
but,
like,
you know,
the people who say, look, abortion has long been the law of the land.
Right. I walk into a voting booth, and based on where people are on choice,
yep,
and gay rights is how I vote for them. Okay.
Because it's salient to you.
Because it's very, very, those two issues are very, very important.
And 10% of the, we think, of the country is gay.
Right.
Do we think
right
that's right?
I think it fluctuates. I'm not quite sure about the percentage, but we'll take it. But be that as it may, you know, people will say things to you one-on-one. Here's my example. When I was blogging at the TU, the cowardice of anonymity raised its ugly head, and people said things to me on that blog that they would never have said to me to my face. Okay, and it was unbelievable. I never experienced that kind of homophobia. So all these Republicans, these straight Republicans in New Hampshire and Massachusetts and the other and California, they're all going to be really nice to these guys. They're all going to glad hand and they're all going to be rah-rah. This is great that you're doing this. You're showing how inclusive everybody is and the party really has a big tent. But when they go into that voting booth, they're going to vote for the other guy. It's just that simple.
Some of them or a woman.
Or a woman.
Some of them
But they're going to vote for the other person.
Some of them will.
It's good that this is happening. You have to admit. Ugh. This is the reason that we've made advances in our ideas about gays in the military and gay marriage. It's because sexual orientation doesn't really have anything to do with politics. And the GOP regulars even have been, up to Cheney, their families have been affected by the issue, if you want to call it an issue. So it's good that we see them running. Whether or not they win, whether or not they persuade others, it's the start of something.
Well, sooner or later, I mean, can you imagine a black president of the United States? I mean, you know, that took a long time to happen.
It did take a long time to happen. But, you know, these guys are not working for their communities. They're not putting the gay community first. They're putting their pocketbooks first.
And that's
the problem
Congress,
I have with this.
Should they be putting the gay community first, Libby?
Yes.
No, I think you're the congressman for everybody.
No,
I'm not
going to
vote for someone who's only going to vote for gay issues.
Look, Jared Polis, Tammy Baldwin, they're out. They work on lots of different issues.
Yes,
right.
That's what I want.
Right. But these guys who are running with the GOP are also then going to be supporting policies that are not good in the long run.
According to Libby.
According to me, for the gay community.
But they
the
may
LGBT
say...
Community.
Okay, next issue.
Say, but they may say, no, the fact of the matter is that and Brian, when he imitates me, always says, the fact of the matter is, he's imitating me. But the fact of the matter is that they may be thinking is that we're entrepreneurial, we're gay, but we're entrepreneurial,
and that's great.
And that's good for the country.
And so is Sean Eldridge and his husband. I mean, they're incredibly entrepreneurial. His husband was one of the people that started Facebook. But what I don't understand is for gay Republicans, how can they be part of a party that would like to put us on an island and blow it up? Okay,
Perhaps they've been part of families who felt that way about him. I mean, many gay people have gotten used to this kind of.
Well, but we shouldn't have to live with it.
But Libby, it
shouldn't be the way.
All right, work from the
Democratic
inside. Party.
We have to take a break because then we have to get a lockbox update. So let's put it on pause just for a second.
You mean
and we'll
shut
be,
up?
No. Well, we only have 2 minutes.
Politely.
So we got to get the break in, and we want to get the lockbox.
Lockbox.
So break.
Support comes from the Henyon Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com. The office of Dr. Vivian Letizia, Woodstock, orthodontic, cosmetic, and general dentistry, featuring laser and digital technologies, woodstockdentist.com. And the Carey Institute of Ecosystem Studies, Millbrook, New York, offering Ecology Day Camp for students entering grades 2 through 7. Week-long sessions begin June 30th, careyinstitute.org.
All right, we just had... well, there's a great place for the microphone to open up. Good morning.
Sorry.
All right, we have 45 seconds, and we're going to find out exactly how that lockbox challenge is going. Megan Finnegan is in the studio to tell us how we did over the weekend.
Well, we did pretty good, Joe. We've got $189,745 in the lockbox.
And we need $325 to get there, right?
Right. We need $135 more, and we've got 14 days to do it.
Well,
and Libby Post is just making a donation right now.
$125 less.
Oh, and that qualifies you for the mug, Libby.
No kidding.
Woo-hoo. You got to tell me what you want.
What must you put on it?
Right.
Yeah. No, that's great. But now it's like as I've said so many times, the water in the sink starts with a little tiny funnel when you and then whoosh towards the end, and we're getting to the whoosh stage.
Let
if everybody
flow.
Would just put something in, we'll have whoosh.
Whoosh! But I tell you, whoosh!
You don't want it to go down the drain.
WAMC.org, WAMC.org to get in the lockbox. $25,000 on the line here, we'll lose it if we don't get it. WAMC.org. Also call us 800-323-9262. We're out of time. Thanks to everybody. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.